Welcome to the More Perfect Union Podcast, a regular discussion on the state of American politics and current events with entertaining and respectful commentary from across the political spectrum. The More Perfect Union Podcast is very happy to be sponsored by Campaign Trail. Campaign Trail is a 2-6 player strategy game in which players are candidates competing to become the next president of the United States. Whether playing in teams with your running mate or one-on-one, it's up to you to sway the voting public in your favor using cards to run a campaign and debate the important issues facing the nation. The candidate that best manages their resources and connects with the public on key issues will win the presidency. Campaign Trail is live on Kickstarter until October 8th. Go to Kickstarter.com and search for Campaign Trail to check out the project and maybe one day become president of the United States. Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. I'm Alan, a dentist. I'm an independent, leaning a little bit to the right, from Michigan.
Hey, I'm Jonah, personal trainer and nutrition teacher, and I'm an independent, maybe leaning a little bit to the left, from the blue state of Maryland.
I'm Greg. I'm a stay-at-home dad from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm definitely a liberal Democrat.
And I'm Kevin. I live in Los Angeles. I'm a television writer, and I'm a Democrat, but definitely not a liberal.
And I'm DJ. I'm from Suffolk, Virginia. I'm a cost estimator, self-described economic conservative, and self-confessed Republican.
You can find more about us on the website at moreperfectpodcast.com. And if you would, take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes. That really lets the world know what we're doing here. Very good, guys. Let's start with our headlines. Jonah, why don't you start with your headline?
Sure. Mine comes from Slate.com. Carson and Trump are tied in the latest poll as Clinton keeps losing ground. Where we are this week in the horse race, Ben Carson, Donald Trump, somewhere around 20-21% each, and Fiorina and Rubio tied at around 11% each. Fascinating. And Hillary Clinton, since July, has been dropping and dropping. She was around 35 points up on Bernie Sanders previously a couple months ago, and now it's getting closer. It's getting closer. Horse race is tightening.
Do you really see this we'll start with Glenn. Do you really see this as a true horse race? How many points is she up on Sanders?
Well, it drops even more if Joe Biden jumps in. So right now it's like, what is it, like 15 or so she's up? But she
15
used to be,
points.
But
right.
She used to be 35.
She used to be up 35, right.
Yeah.
Yes, well, that was when she was Secretary of State and she was coming off of a very good run there. I think to hold her to that level, obviously her support has dropped. But this idea that a 15-point or a 14-point lead is not a lead or that she's cratering, I think is a little silly.
Let me clear the air for you here, you guys. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, as a New York Jet fan this afternoon, it was a painful day. We were down 24 points in the second quarter. We were down 7 points in the fourth quarter. We still didn't win. An L is an L. And at this point, Bernie Sanders would still score the L, even if it's just a 15-point L.
I can clear the air, too, because I'll tell you what, Biden's not coming in. Just so you know, Biden's not coming. They keep waving that around. Biden's not going to come in. So if that's what the numbers are hinging on, then I would pretend like there's no upside for him.
Right.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Although, you know, I don't know whether the media is just trying to stoke the flames, but every day there's a new article saying this points to him coming in. That person says he might be in. This person says he's leaning very seriously. The man either knows or he doesn't know at this point. He's just toying with us.
Sure, but why not leave as the popular elder statesman? You know, he's going to leave as the guy who could have come in and beat Hillary but chose not to. It's way too good for him. There's no upside.
I agree.
I agree.
He has a much better career vying against Al Gore as, quote, the best president we never had. That's his future.
I agree.
That's what he'll probably take.
I agree. I agree with that.
Look at this. We found common agreement.
I know. We just started.
We should stop the show now.
That's right. Thank you very much. And good night.
Good night.
Exactly.
You know, let's move on, because the article I found was in the Washington Post. And I don't usually read Charles Krauthammer, unless I just want to raise my blood pressure, bloaty or gassy. But I read him this weekend, and you know, his actual, the article was, it's called Double Suicide, the Presidential Campaign. And it, the first half of it was just about how terrible the Democrats are. We've got an indicted front runner, a socialist running, and he didn't mention anybody but names, but you know who we were talking about. And it's just terrible. And this should be just the best year ever for the Republican Party, the GOP. But the two front runners, and this leads into Jonah, this ties into Jonah, are Ben Carson and Trump. And Ben Carson had a bad week. And he totally admonished Ben Carson for his Muslim comments. And he said it was morally outrageous that he would even say anything like this, because the GOP stands behind, you know, religion and government should be totally two different things. It's constitutional, which from Charles Krauthammer saying this, I thought I was in bizarro land.
Yep. You know?
And then he went on to say, and Trump is attacking women because, you know, the GOP never stands for that. I really thought I hit my head.
I thought that, I actually thought his article was pretty well written. It was
great.
It struck me as almost like a Saturday Night Live skit. You know what I'm saying? Like it was close to like comedy timing sort of thing. It was pretty good.
It was. But he never says things like that.
I know.
But well, once again, if Charles Krauthammer is saying this about the two front runners, what's that say about this whole race so far? And these are the guys who are rising in the polls.
Yeah.
Well, it says something that I had actually a line I had used for the British election that was earlier this spring, and I guess I can use it now for the presidential election next year. Despite everyone's best efforts, someone has to be elected president in November of 2016.
Exactly. It's so true.
We can't stop that. It has to happen. So, you know, it's I'm not even sure the 2016 is one of those elections. You know, you hear this a lot about from politicians and pundits who are supposedly smart, and usually they're on the side that just lost. They'll say, well, this is a year that we wanted to lose. It would be better to be out of power for the next 4 years than in power for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
You hear that all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there are some years where it might make sense. You know, maybe 1976, you could look, you know, knowing what we now know, you would think, you know, a lot of Democrats might look back and go, you know, maybe we could have let Ford just fall on his face for another 4 years. But I don't see 2016 as that kind of year.
No.
I mean, I don't see 2016 as the kind of year where you say, okay, the next 4 years are definitely going to be worse than the last four. I mean, we have problems, there are issues out there, there are things we got to handle, but I don't see 2016 as being the year that it's better to lose. And yet, both parties seem to be hell bent on trying to figure out how best to lose it anyway, and it just has me very, very confused.
Right. I would say entertained, anyhow. So, all right, Kevin, let's read yours.
Let me add one side.
Oh, go ahead.
In 1976, the Democrats put 16 candidates out. For those of you who are old like me and remember this stuff, just like the Republicans put 16 candidates.
That's interesting.
Out in the primary. For those who are like old.
And I think Lindsey Graham was one of them.
Yeah. So. Exactly. All right, Kevin, on that note, give us your headline.
Mine is from the UK Telegraph. The headline is U.S. trained rebels betray U.S. and hand weapons over to Al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria. Now, the reason that I think this is an important political story is that, as everybody knows, President Obama has come under tremendous criticism for his handling of the fight against ISIS. And, of course, that will, by extension, be criticism of Hillary Clinton. And these know-it-alls like John McCain and Lindsey Graham and pretty much every other Republican presidential candidate who's running around and saying, oh, I'd handle ISIS much differently. The first thing I do is arm the Free Syrian Army. Well, this article speaks to exactly why President Obama hesitated for 2 years about sending arms to these people. They are not reliable. They show no battlefield bravery or strategy at all. And whatever we give them ends up in the hands of our enemies. So just to wrap up, anyone who is selling you a bill of goods about they've got a quick fix to defeat ISIS, just don't believe it.
Well, I've got a long fix to defeat ISIS. Is that helpful? No, but I think just the one thing I would say on that is that one of the things that I noticed in other articles from other sources is one of the big problems that we've had recruiting anti-ISIS fighters over there is that we have told them, you can only concentrate on ISIS. You can't fight the Assad regime. And we have to remember, it was the Assad regime whose brutality and whose tyranny actually started this in the first place. Yes, ISIS are a bunch of bad guys. They're essentially the remnants of Saddam Hussein's mukhabarat that figured, hey, let's try this in a different country. But the people of Syria who would be most likely to help us don't want to be seen as essentially being Assad's proxies. I mean, being our proxies is bad enough in that region. Being our proxies and Assad's proxies is just seen as terrible. Now, I'm not going to say that what anyone has proposed is perfect. They've all gotten something wrong. But I think they have to recognize that for most of the Syrian people, I mean, it's the reason so many have tried to escape Syria, is that you have, I mean, you could just do your pick of mix of terrorist groups over there. You have a secular Shiite Baathist regime that is friends with Iran. You have two different Sunni terrorist groups, one allied to Ayman al-Zawahiri and the al-Qaeda boys, and one allied to Saddam Hussein's old group who basically built it and infiltrated the whole thing. And they've chosen to reject all three and get the hell out of there as soon as they can. The Syrian people are telling us they want to get rid of all of them, not just one. And if we try to focus them more in one direction, we're going to get mistakes like this because we're not really seeing, in my opinion, we're not really seeing the big picture. Now, that's not to say that the president's critics are all right, because I don't think they see the big picture either. What I'm just saying is that it's a lot more complicated than, oh, gee, these people don't really want to fight ISIS. They didn't join ISIS. They joined al-Nusra, which is bad from our perspective. But from their perspective, at least al-Nusra fights the Assad regime. And I think we have to realize the big picture and say, we need, if we're going to do this, and I'm not necessarily saying we should or we shouldn't, that's a different issue. But if we are going to do this, let's make sure we tell these people, look, you can fight the Assad regime too. That's okay.
Yeah, but do we really want to topple the Assad regime?
That's an entirely different discussion.
That's a whole other conversation. And that's
a whole other debate.
Big picture. Right. I mean,
Jonah Allen,
I say that hesitantly, like, yeah. Like, maybe that's not a bad thing, but maybe it is. It's you know, like you said, there are big pictures upon big pictures upon big pictures that it's hard to get from one little article, obviously. But it's easy to criticize.
Yeah, it's a mural, not a big picture.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very difficult to frame. Sorry.
No, that was good framing.
Let's
I think.
Just keep going on this metaphor for the next 45 minutes.
Yep. You run with that. DJ, let's have your headline.
Mine is Alberta Premier sides with Hillary Clinton on her opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline. This is a story about Rachel Notley, who was recently elected Premier of Alberta in just a really massive change wave election. Alberta had a political dynasty that had lasted for 43 years, and voters decided it was just too corrupt and too bloated, and they sent it packing. But they chose a left-wing alternative, the Social Democratic Party, the New Democratic Party, as it's called up there, whose premier is Rachel Notley. And Notley said during the campaign that she would not promote the Keystone Pipeline, that she would not promote various other pipeline projects. She had her own particular pipeline that would go to New Brunswick, Canada, that she thinks is superior to all of them. And what this means is that effectively the only person left in power who actually wants the Keystone Pipeline is Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who has his own election 3 weeks from now and is probably not going to win. So I put this up here because I am going to predict here, and I will probably, and this is an excellent chance for me to fall on my face, but hey, that's what I do. I'm going to predict that I think Harper will be out of power in November, because it takes a little longer for this stuff to work in Canada than, say, Great Britain. And that will give the president the political cover he needs and he wants to reject the pipeline in December and kill the project entirely.
Yeah, so that'll make everybody happy.
That'll make everyone happy, that's for sure. But Hillary should have just waited, you know, two more months then.
Yeah, it's interesting that she weighed in. It's interesting that, it's interesting that she's made enough of a big deal that the premier felt like she needed to weigh in, because there's no real upside to her. I don't know. It's interesting. I honestly, it's the first I'd read of that, so I'm kind of.
Well, you know, we've talked about Hillary moving further to the left due to the Bernie Sanders influence. You know, I mean, she didn't have to weigh in, but she did. She didn't have to say, anything about Citizens United, but she did, you know, and this all has to do maybe because she keeps, you know, dropping in the polls. Bernie Sanders keeps rising. And, you know, two more months, this is a moot point and it's gone. How did you feel about it? Well, you know, I felt about it. And she has on record said she supported it. So maybe she wanted to get in under the radar. Yeah, it was, you know, now she doesn't even have to fight about it.
I think, you know, she clearly has, I think she is clearly afraid that what happened to her in 2008 will happen to her again. The dynamics are different. I would be very surprised if it happened to her again. But people who are afraid don't think. People who are afraid act and react. And I think this is in her mind. This is the one thing that would keep, that will keep her from winning. In her mind, she would have won in 2008 if Barack Obama had not outflanked her to the left on the Iraq war. And she wants to make sure that nobody outflanks her on the left on anything. And I think that's what she is. That's, I think that's why she did what she did. And I think that's why she felt she did what she had to do. And I mean, I'm outside the Democratic Party, so I don't know the internals very well. But my first thought would be that that was probably a wise move on her part politically.
It's interesting, yeah, though. Does anyone really think that? Does anyone really think that Bernie Sanders is going to come up? I mean, all the polling is not particularly accurate this early in this. I mean, like, no, there's no way that Bernie Sanders is going to be their nominee. No chance.
I don't think so. But I do think that if Sanders pulls out New Hampshire and possibly has a very strong second showing or even wins Iowa, I do think that you're going to see a long campaign. I think that she ultimately will prevail. But I don't think this is going to be a cakewalk.
I think that's almost convenient for her because she needed someone to make it look like there was competition instead of the whole coronation thing. I just don't see anyone really. Biden's not going to come in. I say this so surely, and I mean, I'd be happy to be wrong because I enjoy watching the chaos. But Biden's not going to come in, and Sanders is not any real challenge. He's there as a good foil. He could be a good foil, I think, but I just don't think. I just look at this. I'm like, this is all just news stories, you know. The same thing with Trump, actually.
You know,
right. If we don't about two- have challenger, we don't have debates. If yep. we don't have debates, I mean, to be quite honest, Bernie Sanders Clinton debates are exciting for the fact that one, we know neither one are going to throw blows.
No, that's right.
So think about this. They're going to have 2 hours, six times, and we can discuss, oh, how terrible that they're only going to do six debates. But six times, they're only going to get up and talk, oh, you're a pretty good cat. You're a pretty nice
It is. You're right.
And
you're right.
Yeah. Talk policy and yeah. talk real policy instead of, well, this person said this about you.
Yeah.
This person said this about you. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I think that awesome. They can make a showing of looking more presidential, but... that's interesting. We're really getting off topic, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I want to just speak to that. I want to stay off topic for a moment.
Do it.
I suspect that in a couple of weeks when we're doing our show right after the Democratic debate, we're going to be singing a slightly different tune because I think Sanders is going to be perceived as the winner of that debate. And here's why. First of all, he's coming in with lower expectations. She's the person that's debated many, many times on the national stage. But his style is hotter than hers. She's a very kind of calm, cool, collected debater. And he's going to be, you know, fire and brimstone. And I think that between that and his people, you know, spinning that he won the debate, I think that you're going to see the polls say that he won the debate. And that could really shake things up again, making things a little bit more iffy going into the first two primaries.
Yeah, I think there's a real chance that he's going to win a couple primaries. I think he's going to do well in certain areas, just like Ron Paul did. You know, I think that Sanders has enough together there. And we also can't really predict what the hell is going on with this email junk. I think there's a really weird off chance that instead of Democratic Party just sort of dismissing it as those darn Republicans being crazy and partisan, there's a real chance that she can get into some actual legal trouble over this.
Well, when you have the Obama administration saying, oh, by the way, we found a bunch of emails that she must have forgot to send to the FBI.
I mean, we
were nowhere to be found on that one.
So we
saw that in the paper the way the rest of y'all did. We don't know where that came from. So I think that for me, the only thing that would be interesting about a possible Biden candidacy is that he would be the moment he says I'm in, if he does, and I don't think he does, but if he does, the moment he does, he automatically becomes the standard bearer for everyone who wants an Obama third term. They all go to him. Are there enough of those voters to eclipse Secretary Clinton? That I don't know. I'll leave that to Greg and Kevin. It's their party. They would know it better than I would.
Well, I'll say this. I think that's his great weakness, frankly. I mean, I you know, I'm a fan of President Obama's. If he was on the ballot, I probably would vote for him again. But I think trying to run for an Obama third term is a sure way to lose this election. And I think the great strength for Hillary Clinton is that even though she was in the administration, she can remove herself a little bit from some of those issues. And especially economic issues, she could say that wasn't my area of expertise. That wasn't what I was involved in when I was with the administration. I think having to defend a third Obama term is a sure path to defeat.
In November, perhaps, but what about the spring? What about the spring nominations? Oh, that's what I'm thinking about here.
Good point. Okay, good point.
Oh, I think anyone who runs on an Obama third term in the Democratic Party is a shoo-in. So in 2008, Bush was nowhere to be seen at the Republican convention. Okay, he was not there.
No, of course not. We weren't that stupid, despite our reputation.
Right. But the point was, no one was running on, hey, here's another year of Bush, right? But if you will see Obama at that convention,
of course, sure.
Oh, of course, and he will be like, hey, here it is.
That's a really interesting point. I totally agree.
And it doesn't matter who wins. I mean, if it's Bernie Sanders, if it's Clinton, if it's, you know, Doc Brown, doesn't matter. You know, it could be anybody.
Have you heard that he's getting in?
Doc Brown?
Doc Brown.
With his time machine?
I'll tell you what, man. He's got he'd have some severe advantages with the time machine.
Well, he promised us hoverboards.
Yeah, hoverboards. So. Well, what about fusion? Right. Fusion, hello. Energy.
It's
who needs a pipeline when you've got Mr. Fusion? Hello.
So with that in mind, it doesn't matter who it was. He will come in.
He'd probably run as an independent, though, don't you think?
Who, Obama?
Doc Brown. Sorry.
I know.
That's okay.
Well, we ran with that one. Wow.
Memory serves, we're a headline short.
Yep. Let's wrap up the headlines.
Let's wrap off, and there's headlines.
my headline, I can do this quickly. My headline was from the 538 blog. It's there are a few libertarians, but many Americans have libertarian views. I thought that this was a really good blog post. Libertarians as a party, they just don't have it together. But I think a lot of people really relate well to certain libertarian things. I mean, not the stuff that they relate to is marijuana legalization, a lot of the, you know, freedom from stupid. I don't know. Most people are not so big on like the gold standard, but I just felt like it was pretty good article.
It's a great article.
The thing about is we have to remember is that the country's founding had a lot of libertarian thinking, libertarian mm-hmm. ideas to it, and both parties really sort of blow the libertarian embers in their organization, mm-hmm. or at least in their campaign rhetoric whenever they go out there. You know, Democrats go talk about their libertarian stance on social issues. Republicans try to talk about their libertarian stance on economic issues. It's half the reason that whenever the Pope shows up, he confuses the hell out of everybody because he leads a decidedly communitarian organization, mm-hmm. and he speaks in a communitarian language, and the rest of us just sit back and go, what?
Mm-hmm. It was interesting because they talked about how each part, just like you said, each party has a fair amount of they kind of want to lay claim to a lot of the libertarians, but as a party, the libertarians have kind of fallen on their face, even though honestly, a lot of the beliefs are right in the line with mainstream America. I thought that was pretty interesting.
I'd be curious to know how much that would be true without the ballot access laws that favor Democrats and Republicans. Yeah. In a lot of cases, libertarians are going up against legal requirements and, frankly, legal advantages to the two big parties.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
That may have more to do with them being backed up than anything else.
Gary Johnson is a decent candidate, actually. He's not – he's a little out there, but he's a pretty decent – shoot, last – in – what, in 2000, the last presidential election, he was one of the original, he was in as a Republican to start with.
Right.
I mean, he didn't last, but, and everyone knew he was going to run for the Libertarian nomination, but he's not even a bad candidate, for crying out loud. Most time, Libertarian candidates are nuts. They're just, you can't even, yeah, so it was interesting. It's a good article.
I would say Governor Johnson's probably the most, for lack of a better term, he's the most respectable candidate the Libertarians have had in a
very long time. Exactly. You could, yeah, no, that's exactly right.
But Libertarians tend to pull from the Republican side.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, you know, because, just like the socialist side pull from the Democrats, which, once again, like you said, both parties have leanings. Democrats have the get out of my bedroom. Republicans have get out of my business.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, but like you said, also, they can. Have you ever watched the convention, the Libertarian convention? It's awesome. It is an awesome. It's at like a Holiday Inn,
mm-hmm.
and their banners have like little holes because it's all like dot matrix printers. Mm-hmm. It is one of the best things to watch.
Pretty grassroots there.
It is pretty, and everyone's walking around like, is it time to do this now? And like things pop off and they're like, no, don't set off the fireworks yet. And it is awesome how disorganized it is. It's wonderful.
There's something to be said for that.
I watch the Libertarian convention every 4 years.
That's fun.
It is so, it's seriously, it's one of the best things to watch.
I'd like to go to an anarchist convention. I think that would be fun.
I never get their directions right.
The strongest I ever supported the Libertarian Party was around the Free State Project. Do you guys remember? The idea was all the libertarians out there, maybe they're at 1%, maybe 2% in any given state. But if we all together move to New Hampshire, we can take over New Hampshire. And they spent years. They spent like, it was a 10-year plan to move all the libertarians. If you Google Free State Project, you'll still find it. But it was to move enough libertarians to New Hampshire to take over the government to show that the libertarian ideas could run a state. And I was non-ironic, non-crazy, like actually think, like, I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you think that your ideas can run a state? Go do it. Show me that you're organized enough to move 100,000 people, 200,000 people to New Hampshire and do it. And I want to see what, I legitimately want to see what happens. And they couldn't get it together. So I guess that tells us something. But I really like that idea. If you think that your ideas are legitimate and that you've been marginalized, then you have to do something. And if that means moving everybody to New Hampshire, then have at it.
Well, there was a group in Northern Colorado that tried to do the same thing. They tried to secede.
Northern Colorado one makes more sense because of the weed laws. That's the problem. You're not going to get libertarians moving to New Hampshire because of the marijuana laws. Let's be honest here. All right, you guys, we need to move on to our main discussion Let's start with we got two really big headlines here. We got Scott Walker dropped out of the Republican race this week. So
where did you guys have him in your pool? Did you see him falling out at the very beginning?
No, he was really strong in the beginning.
No, I will tell you why a lot of us in the Republican Party actually thought he would go the distance. This was a guy who had essentially sort of broken the idea mold for a lot of us, come up with something in a relatively blue state. Wisconsin was a state that's teased Republicans over the last 10 years and then always just leans over to the Democrats. But he managed to beat off a recall in an election year and then get himself reelected. What we didn't realize, and it's something that we're actually seeing, I think, in all the gubernatorial, the governors who are running for president, is governors can be very good on local issues. They can be very good on state issues, but they can also be very hit or miss on national issues. And that was Walker's problem. And he's going to hate me for saying this if he's listening, but it reminded me a lot of Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is the only politician in Alaska to beat the Murkowski machine. She's the only one.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Miller beat Lisa Murkowski in a primary. She ran in a general election as a write-in and beat him. Sarah Palin actually beat her dad, Frank Murkowski. She was a very important person in Alaska. She was well-versed on Alaskan issues. But as for the lower 48, she was, forgive the term, a babe in the woods. And that's how it came across. Sorry. I know. Horribly sexist of me.
No.
Did you say sexist or sexy?
Horribly sexist of me. I'm halfway
I thought it was kind of sexy
played
myself.
At my wedding? But in any event, it is a reminder that governors are not necessarily all that wise on national issues. They know their own state very well. They don't necessarily know the country well. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of with just about every governor who's out there running. You know, the only ones that had any kind of national experience, the only one was Bobby Jindal. And his time in Louisiana has essentially eroded his national appeal. And for everyone else, their governors should do well in their state,
Kasich.
But nothing nationally. It'll be curious to see what happens with John Kasich. That's true. He has he had a very long congressional history before he became governor of Ohio. But for a lot of people, that national history was a generation ago. And maybe he's able to parlay it together. That could very well happen. But as for the rest of them, Christie, even Bush to some extent, Bush hasn't been on a ballot in 14 years, but get them on national issues.
Governor, and that's it.
Yeah. Get them on national issues and they start to flub a bit. Now, if you look at a big state like Texas or California, something that just automatically has some sort of national pull, you may be a little safer. But if you go for a small state, unless you make sure they have national appeal, you could be risky.
But you say that, I'll interrupt, a big state like Texas, who was the first one out? Rick Perry.
I thought Rick Perry seemed smart for leaving, personally.
That's also true.
that was the smartest thing he did with his campaign, was to end it.
Is it at this point, not so much popularity, polls, but is it really come down to money?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. I mean,
but he had money. He had money, and
he spent it real fast.
Well, right. he apparently had a huge organization that was like sucking him dry, and his money men were. I mean, you'll notice it happened quite quickly after that debate. His debate showing was poor at best, and I think his money. He's got money suppliers, and they're like, "We're done with you." I'm sure of it. I'm convinced that they saw he had this huge organization that was sucking him dry, and. And they didn't think he was going to go. And I honestly, a month ago, I'd have bet on him. I really and truly, he was great when he'd get on a radio interview. He was at
20% in the polls.
I know. And he just, his showing at the debate was pathetic. He faded into the back,
You know, when he tried to do his Trump moment, like, let me say something completely outrageous here. The only thing he could do was his fallback. And that was when he said, I'm going to outlaw all national unions. And that was it. That's his fallback. And
I thought his fallback was that we didn't need an apprentice in the White House. I thought that was his fallback.
Oh, that was too. But
which brings us to Marco Rubio. Now, here's the thing. I think that Rubio is...
Full disclosure before we go any further, because I did not mention this earlier, I am actually supporting Marco Rubio's candidacy.
Well, I'm going to end that right now.
We'll see about that. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, now the gloves are off.
That's right.
Oh, no, it's no gloves off thing. I'm just
he's your guy.
He's my guy. I have made my selection for the nomination. That does not mean he's perfect. It just means I think he's the best of the field. Go on, Kevin.
It's okay. Well, we've got Rubio falling out in the pool pretty soon. So
no, I actually think Rubio could end up getting the nomination. I certainly think he's going to give Bush a run for his money. But my point is, and where I was going with it is, if he were to get the nomination, I can't wait to see the Republicans who called Obama, totally unprepared for the presidency based on his 4 years or his 2 years in the Senate. I can't wait for them to just turn on a dime and start telling us how prepared Marco Rubio is to run the largest country in the world.
And they will turn very quickly because it's just talking points and they read whatever the heck is put in front of them.
Yeah,
you and I both know this guy.
Yeah, sure.
Ben Carson? hella. I mean, he's leading. He's a neurosurgeon, but
and that is not to say Kevin does not have a point. One of Rubio's biggest weaknesses is that he will have a full Senate term and that's it on the national stage when he if he wins the nomination and if he goes into November. What I think honestly 2008 showed us though is that voters are not necessarily as high on experience as they used to be.
I agree.
I'm not saying what's good or bad.
Yep.
And I would actually say if in a Clinton-Rubio race, I would still say, to use the football odds terms, I would still probably give it – I would still say Clinton pick 'em in the popular vote and maybe Clinton minus 10 in the Electoral College. But essentially if Rubio gets nominated, it will be a generational race. It will be Generation X versus the baby boomers – and then the millennials will have to figure out which generation that they want. And that's, again, that's at this point, you know, Generation X has never been anywhere politically. So this will be a surprise introduction to the millennials. Oh, by the way, yes, we are here. We were here for a while and now we want to run the country. Whether that works or not, we'll see. But
see,
I think.
Go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, but I guess what I will say is that what matters at this point is, you know, there are all these inner primaries in the Republican Party. There's the establishment primary, there's the money primary and such. Well, those two primaries really only have two contenders now, and it's Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush. And so long, and as of right now, Marco Rubio is in the polls what I would call on the right side of a statistical tie with Jeb Bush, which is he's higher in the polls nominally. Statistically, it's a tie. But so long as Rubio stays at least even or slightly ahead, or actually gets slightly ahead of Jeb Bush, you'll start to see more pressure from the establishment folks on Bush to say, you know, we only brought you in here because Christie fell apart on Bridgegate. We wanted you to save us. We think he'll save us now. You can go away. You might start to see that over the next 2 to 3 months if Rubio maintains the position that some of the polls are showing that he has now, which is slightly ahead or on the good side of a statistical tie with Jeb Bush. That's the one to watch over the next 3 or 4 months.
Which is super interesting because neither one of those guys are in the top three at this point. So at what point,
right,
what do you see happen? Okay, one question for everyone. Who's the next Republican to drop out and when?
Pataki? Jindal?
I say Jindal. Jindal's a high,
Jindal.
High chance.
I think Jindal. Yeah.
Jindal.
It depends on their money Jindal. At this point, too. I mean, I don't know where they all stand with money, but I think a lot of the JV team probably doesn't have a lot, so.
I would think, well, I think go ahead.
For Pataki and Gilmore, Santorum, and Lindsey Graham, this is largely a vanity project. I think Jindal actually got into this thinking he could actually win the damn thing, and so it's probably going to be easier to have the intervention with him and say, look, it's not happening. Go back to Louisiana. Whereas for the other four in the minor leagues, you know, they're not in this to win. Everybody knows they're not going to win. So I think they'll be a bit more like Wile E. Coyote running off the cliff. They'll still hang out in the air for a while before they drop. Jindal doesn't have that. So I think Jindal's probably the one next to go.
Okay.
And I'll tell you who's going to go earlier rather than later is Lindsey Graham, because in my opinion, this man has to go before the South Carolina primary. He cannot let himself be embarrassed the way he's going to be embarrassed in the South Carolina in primary.
Good point.
Agreed.
He does not need
lose. He can't lose his home state. That ends whatever career he has.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It seems. Yeah. He's really been sort of like a single issue candidate from the way I've been watching him, just hearing him talk about the military. And I, similar to what Sanders is doing, I think that what he wants to do is to get all of the upper tier candidates to really declare support for a stronger military intervention. And I don't think they're biting. I don't think it doesn't seem like any of them are afraid to when they acknowledge what he's saying, they're not afraid to say, I don't think I agree with that. I don't think we need that many troops there. So I think I don't know if he's sensing that yet, but, you know, he's not getting big shifts on people's statements about the military.
Because Lindsey Graham's domestically, Lindsey Graham is so far removed from your average Republican that a lot of people are just tuning him out on what he says on foreign affairs. Even if they agree with him on foreign affairs, they're still tuning him out because on domestic stuff, you know, he loudly endorsed the bank bailout, which is an anathema within the party. you know, I mean, half, you know, half of the confusion that a lot of folks have is that it happened in 2012. Only two candidates really openly, full-throatedly endorsed the bank bailout, but the rest of them split all the anti-bank bailout vote, and one of the pro-bank bailout guys squeaked through, and that was Romney.
Interestingly, we just spent more than 2 minutes talking about Lindsey Graham, which frankly is this hasn't happened in any other source of news in probably the whole time. So this we've probably given Lindsey Graham more time than anyone.
It doesn't happen at his family Thanksgiving.
I was going to say exactly.
Mark my words, though. I'm going to say this about Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is shooting for a vice president spot.
Oh, he's
You think? I don't know. Miss. Secretary of Defense. Secretary of Defense.
Because
it's going to be Kasich, and Lindsey Graham are fighting for that vice president spot. And Lindsey is saying, I'm one of the few guys with actual military background. None of the other guys, I mean, who else has been in the military?
Let me inform you all what I believe the vice presidential shortlist is. If anyone except Rubio is nominated, it comes down to three names: Susana Martinez, governor of New Mexico, governor of New Mexico, and Susana Martinez, governor of New Mexico. Okay. That's it.
That's it.
That's the list.
I've been saying that for a while. I think that she could be the one.
Interesting.
Yeah, the only presidential candidate who will not nominate her is Rubio
because he's already got that box checked.
Yeah. Well, he thinks he has the box checked.
He
doesn't because he's not Mexican American, but he thinks he has the box checked. So he will probably not go with Martinez, but anybody else, they're going with Susana Martinez.
Well, interesting. In my opinion. Have you guys heard that the Speaker of the House is going to leave his post soon?
Something about that. What?
John Boehner announced his resignation. What was it? Friday? I think it was Friday. So
it was Friday.
It was Friday. So yeah, what I understand is that he talked to the Pope.
Yeah, he said some prayers. Intervention.
Yep. I think that's why the Pope came. Actually, people wondering why he came. I think he's trying to get Boehner out of his office. I don't know. Who knows?
He told him the true meaning of Christmas, and his heart grew three times bigger, and he saved Whoville that day.
Yeah, yep.
I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
I never knew the Grinch was so tan.
Oh, and it's true.
Boehner's exit signifies, I think, three things. One of which is specific about him, in that Boehner was more a manager than a leader. He wasn't a visionary in much the way Gingrich was. And the thing about visionaries that we have sort of forgotten, because we haven't had any of them since Gingrich, is visionaries actually have an easier time holding the party together because they give the caucus something to defend. And, you know, Gingrich's caucus was much more ideologically varied than Boehner's caucus was. Gingrich's caucus had a much more stronger moderate contingent, a much stronger, quote-unquote, left wing within the party. But he managed to hold it together because he kept giving them stuff to defend. He kept giving them stuff to argue. Boehner never really did that. And because he never really gave the party a unifying force, they bickered amongst themselves. The second thing of the three things that I think it signifies is that there's usually within the Republican Party, there's the establishment wing and there's the conservative wing. And even if you throw various names at it, you know, there's economic conservatives, the social conservatives, there's the tea brewers and everything else. But that dichotomy is still largely holds. The difference is the conservative wing, which is the ideological wing and is supposed to be the wing where the ideas come from. The conservative wing is much more tribal today than it ever was, which is not good. It is something that's very problematic for the party and problematic for that wing itself. And they decided that it wasn't Boehner's management style. It wasn't what Boehner was doing. It was Boehner himself that was the issue. That's the sense of the tribalism of the conservative wing. It's why Trump and Carson and Fiorina are doing so well. It's a very tribal sense of if you are an elected official, you are the enemy, you are the bad guy. That's not good for the party, not good for the conservatives either. The third thing is Boehner was and still is trying to focus on the notion of bringing people together, of giving here and taking there, of compromise and things that the country sort of prides itself on, and that both establishment wings of the, you know, the Democratic establishment and the Republican establishment, you know, have as their main selling points and what they try to sell to the country. I think what a lot of folks in Washington do not understand is that most Americans have only seen the parties really come together once over the last 10 years, and that was the bank bailout, which is wildly unpopular, which in my opinion actually did a lot, did much worse to the, more damage to the economy than work to heal it. And because it was completely rewritten by the Treasury Secretary after it was enacted, it greatly eroded Democratic accountability, but it also devalued compromise. It devalued coming together to solve a problem. I mean, Lewis Black once said, the only thing worse than a Republican and Democrat is when the two pricks work together.
Oh, that's totally agreed. I totally agree.
And there's a lot of Americans who think that, and that is more especially true on the Republican side, where opposition to the bailout within the party was much stronger. Compromise and working together are devalued now among Americans generally, and they're devalued among Republicans in particular. And I think those three things are what sent Boehner, or what led Boehner to realize he was packing. Some of it was just his management style, but some of it is changes within the party that are frankly not good from my perspective as a Republican. I don't like the conservative wing being more tribal.
Is the GOP going to split eventually because of this conservative wing, the Freedom Caucus? I use that word in quotes, but is the GOP eventually going to split because of the Freedom Caucus?
If there were not the ballot access laws that are continually in place in most of the 50 states, I would say a split would be possible. Those ballot access laws basically those ballot access laws force the continued existence of the Republican Party as one entity, because it's a guaranteed ballot slot in just about every state in the country. Without that, the party would not even – I'm not even sure the party would split as much as the party might just atomize. But that ballot access law – that ballot access
now, law – Now you're just talking dirty to me.
Greg's kind of aroused by that kind of talk. So is this a good thing for – is fresh GOP leadership – is that a good thing for the party? Is that going to be shot in the arm?
No.
Is it fresh?
Well, fresh – it's not going to be Boehner. I mean, is someone new in there? Is that going to be a shot in the arm?
I got a list here. I'm going to throw out some names here.
Okay, give us the list.
Go ahead.
I'm going to throw out some names. And you guys, and we all know Kevin McCarthy of California. He's at the top of the list. Okay.
I would say he will likely be the next speaker.
I agree.
Okay. Everyone likes him. He's like that jock quarterback that, you know, he also does everyone's homework. He's a super nice guy. You're right. I agree. However, Daniel Webster of Florida is the only one who's actually declared. He declared he was going to run 2 hours.
I like him on name recognition. I just let me say that right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel Webster is a very nice name.
It's not a bad name to have. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
However, last time he ran, he only got 12 votes.
Exactly. Which is why he will be out the minute Jeb Hensarling declares.
Yeah.
Jeb Hensarling is the next one on my list. Old Texas. Go on.
Yeah, he will likely be, if he chooses to get in, the insurgents will likely go around him. He scored a lot of points with the insurgents in his fight against the Export-Import Bank. Mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, that's how anybody even knows who the heck he is. So if he runs, he's going to be the insurgent candidate, and Webster is just going to fade away or back out. But I don't think he's going to beat McCarthy. I don't think he's going to beat McCarthy.
Actually, the other one I would say, Jim Jordan from my old state of Ohio. He's actually head of the Freedom Caucus. Crazy as a loon. But the Freedom Caucus, that's 42 votes right there if he wants to run. And he may not win the majority. He may not win Speaker. But do you think they'd give him like whip or majority leader? Or they wouldn't give him majority leader, but... maybe whip?
The first thing is, if he runs against Hensarling, he doesn't get the 42 members of his own caucus. A whole bunch of them look for Hensarling. So that's something that Jordan has to figure out. Does he want to tilt at the windmill and make things harder for Hensarling? Or does he want to just step back, let Hensarling run if Hensarling runs. I mean, if Hensarling chooses not to do it, there's a different issue.
Right.
And try for something lower. I haven't seen a lot of McCarthy. I don't know whether McCarthy would try to figure out a way to spread the post among the various factions. So he may try to set something up so that Jordan could take either the majority whip or maybe the conference chairman. That was Boehner's position under Gingrich. It's right. possible that Jordan could take a lower thing, but I honestly don't know.
It's going to be exciting no matter what. I'm really looking forward to see the, you know, ensuing chaos. You know, such a different change.
So I think one of the interesting things is going to be to see how this comes up in the next Republican debate, which is October 28th.
October 20th. That'd be interesting to see if that comes up, because all the stuff's going to, it'll be hitting the, when did he say he was going to finish? It was in October, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The end of October.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if Cruz got into the House's business. I don't know. Most of the others probably won't, but it'll. I bet somebody will give it lip service there. I bet.
maybe they'll dedicate it to him or something.
Ted Cruz is almost certain to bring this up on the 28th. He is almost certain to take full credit for it. In Ted Cruz's depiction of it, he himself donned the armor and the sword and charged into the House conference room and personally slain, I'm using my verbiage wrong, but he slayed John Boehner himself. And that's what he will say on the 28th.
Yeah, for not being a real Republican, just like the Supreme Court doesn't have any Republicans on it.
That may be the most truthful thing that Mr. Cruz has ever said.
The thing about Ted that I just find, I guess for you, all of us within the party have that moment where we just looked at Ted, where we looked at Ted Cruz and the scales fell from our eyes. For mine, it was trade promotion authority when they were trying to maneuver that through. And Cruz initially voted for it, which makes sense because, you know, for those of us who believe in free trade, freer trade is better than less free trade. But then he switches his vote on it and votes no. Because supposedly the president held back something called the Trade and Services Agreement, which the Breitbart folks are screaming about as a way to basically invalidate every immigration law that we've ever come up with. Well, the problem is, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership and like the Trans-Atlantic Trade Investment Partnership, the TISA agreement, TISA, has not actually been signed. It's not actually been completed. No one is going to publicly reveal an agreement that has not been fully completed yet, especially when you don't know who all the participants are. So that was just a ridiculous fig leaf for Cruz to use. And he basically did it because some of the nut bars upon whom he relies have decided that, you know, they've gone all the way back to the old Smoot-Hawley days, and they decided that, oh, well, free trade is a bad idea. We don't like it anymore. So you better not like it either. He couldn't say that, so he pretzelized himself. And honestly, you know, this is going to horrify at least two of you, maybe all of you. I was considering going Cruz's way until he made that complete fiasco of a decision.
I wanted somebody
who stuck to what was right, or to what I thought was right on TPA, and that was Marco Rubio, and that's why I decided to back him. But that was where, you know, just about everyone within the party has had that moment where Cruz shifted from the very brilliant Ivy League law clerk to the utter charlatan that he has become. He's largely become a caricature of himself.
My favorite example is he's the remora on the Trump shark, on the Trump great right white. I kind of like that one. That's a good one.
I thought it was when he was shooting machine gun bacon. And he's like, ah, come and get it. This is how I do it every day. I'm not insane.
All right, there's one other debate that comes up before the Republican debate. That would be the first Democrat debate, October 13th. And I'm thinking maybe we need to have a recording soon after that, too.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to me.
Is that your birthday?
It's the day after.
Perfect. Well, it's like a gift. So who's going to be in that debate? Honestly, is it going to be more than Hillary and Bernie?
I'd like Larry Lessig in there, but we'll see.
It's going to be one shining light on Hillary.
Yeah.
Everyone
else is escaping.
Yeah.
It will also include Jonah's former governor, Martin O'Malley.
Yeah. Okay, I wonder if O'Malley, is he going to be in it?
He'll drop out
before then. Don't you think he'll drop out before then?
No, I think he'll be there, and I think the DNC wants him there.
Yeah. Most people don't know he's running, so he's got to remind people that Maryland exists.
Yeah.
Right. He's got to remind people he's running, and he's got to hope that nobody asks him, Governor, did you really run the state in such a crappy way that they voted for a Republican to replace you?
Yeah. Yeah, people don't know that. I don't think he's in the primary. If he's still running when we get to Maryland, he's not going to carry Maryland. I don't think he's going to win the primary.
No.
Stings. Hello. All right, my friends, we've done quite a job this evening. We've covered everything you need to know about politics. So
I feel safe.
Yeah, that's right. So sure. We'll be back next week. But before then, I want you guys, if you're listening, I want you to head over to the website, moreperfectpodcast.com. Check out what we've got there. Kevin is we're all trying to write some stuff there. Kevin's really writing it out there. So there's stuff to read there. But also go over to iTunes and give us some stars. 5 stars would be good. And write a review too. Because the more people see that stuff, the more chances we could show up in new and noteworthy, get a little publicity, and we'll make the pirate ship grow. So thank you guys very much for being here tonight. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Great show.
I very much enjoyed it.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
All right. Next week then.
Thank you for listening to the More Perfect Union podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and check out the website at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for the More Perfect Union podcast crew, you can email us at moreperfectunionpodcast@gmail.com. We'll talk to you next week.